The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth is the world's greatest salmon fishery through investment in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA, we're on board with you.
Noticing more boats hauling out every day as the fishing gradually slows in a few districts, but there still may be a big tail end to 2017. Good evening, it's Friday, July 14th. The total run is now a little past 45 million sockeye. Coming up, an on-the-water update from Ugashik, where one skipper says it's getting a little crowded.
It's exploded with effort and tenders, and it's clear that this is the last stop for quite a few folks. And it'll be kind of a dogfight from here on out with all the competitions.
Plus the fact that all nine counting projects are counting and test fisheries test fishing has a lot to do with a collaboration mainly between drifters, processors, and BBSRI this year.
It took 18 months to come together, and this is the first season that we're providing about $680,000 to the management program combined among all parties.
Plus, we'll go pick up deliveries with an Eastside beach tender and check in with some local businesses to see how their seasons are going, too.
Everyone is very friendly. Everyone's nice who comes into the net. And so we've had a good time visiting with everyone, the local people and also the cannery workers and fishermen who've come in.
That's all ahead on tonight's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report.
Programming on KDLG is made possible by Alaska Marine Lines, providing reliable barge service from Seattle and Anchorage to Bristol Bay ports and Dutch Harbor. More information for the Seattle area at 800-426-3113 and NACNAC at 246-6667.
This is Pat Owens, Friends of KDLG board member. Starting with a BBRSDA grant in 2008, KDLG was able to produce the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report and air the show 3 days a week. For the past 3 years, KDLG has expanded the coverage and production of the fisheries report to 7 days a week, hoping the fishermen, processors, and others would value the extra effort and respond with additional financial support to the station. We would like to thank Icicle, Ocean Beauty, Leader Creek, and AGS for allowing their fleet to make donations to the Pounds for Public Radio campaign this week. For the other processors, it's not too late to participate. Fishermen, call your processor and ask them to allow you to donate on a fish ticket. I would also like to thank Silver Bay Seafoods for keeping the fish and game announcements on the air by being the exclusive sponsor this summer. If you value the fisheries report, we need your financial support this week. Call and make a generous donation to KDLG. Call 1-800-478-1670 or 842-5281. Thanks and good fishing.
And thank you, Pat, and thanks to all of you who have donated so far this week. Pledge drive is not over yet. We'll be here all night long to answer your phone calls, and of course you can pledge anytime online at kdlg.org. We're not quite to our goal yet this year. We do know that there are pounds being delivered out there on the water, and we won't have that tally till next week. But if you're fishing for Leader Creek, Icicle, or Ocean Beauty tonight, you can still make a pledge of pounds on your fish ticket to support public radio in Bristol Bay. 842-5281, 1-800-478-KDLG. Let's start tonight's program with a summary of your Bristol Bay sockeye run. Yesterday's catch across all districts was 1,750,000 fish. Total harvest so far this season, 29,289,000. That's out of a preseason forecast of 27,470,000. Yesterday's escapement, not including the Alagnac River here, is 682,000 fish. Total escapement so far this season is now about 15 million, counted as passage. And the total run to Bristol Bay with the in-river estimates is 45,009,000 sockeye out of a preseason forecast of 41.5 million fish. Broken down by district, the catch in Ugashik on Thursday was 323,000 sockeye. Total catch there this season, 3,483,000 fish through yesterday. Escapement past the tower was 119,000 sockeye. Cumulative escapement on the Ugashik River, 751,000 out of a goal of 500,000 to 1.4 million. Paul Salamone has an in-river estimate of 150,000 fish, and that brings the total run to Ugashik now to 4,384,000 out of a preseason forecast of 5.4 million. Igigig District catch on Thursday, 502,000 sockeye. Cumulative harvest in Agagic, 9,356,000. Past the tower, 14,800 reds. Cumulative escapement, 2,393,000. That is over the top end of the goal of 800,000 to 2 million fish. Total run to Agagic District this year, 11,749,000. Again, that's over the preseason forecast of 10.6 million over the Agagic preseason forecast of 10.6 million. Naknek Wheejack harvest on Thursday, 590,000 sockeye. Season total harvest in the district is 5,756,000. Your escapement counts there for the Upper East Side District. Naknek River, 103,000 sockeye counted past the tower. Season total escapement, 1.6 million. That's it still inside the goal range of 800,000 to 2 million fish. Wheejack River escapement was 191,000 past the tower. Season total on the Wheejack, 2,165,000. Lagnac Tower count, 120,000 yesterday for a cumulative of 1.6 million past the Lagnac River Tower. With the in-river estimate of 150,000 to the Wheejack River, the total run to Naknek Wheejack District is now 9,682,000 fish, out of a preseason forecast of 16.1 million. Nooshigak fleet, as small though it may now be, hauled in 322,000 sockeye Thursday. Season total harvest there, 10,461,000. Just a few hundred thousand shy of setting an all-time harvest record for the district this year as well. Your counts for the West Side District rivers here. First, the Nooshigak Kings yesterday, 290 past the sonar. Puts the season total to 55,314. That's now inside the escapement goal range. Nooshigak Reds, 31,000 past the sonar. Season total counts on the Nooshigak, 2,710,000. Well over the top end of the escapement goal range for the Nooshigak of 370 to 900,000 fish. Wood River counts, 192,000 past the tower yesterday. Season total on the Wood is 3,744,000. Well over the top end of the goal for the Wood of 700,000 to 1.8 million. Igushik River counted to 25,788. Season total on the Igushik, 411,000. Also now over the goal of 150 to 400,000 fish for that river. Season total on the Nooshigak through midnight yesterday, 17,325,000 fish. Togiak fleet hauled in 14,000 sockeye yesterday. Total catch there this season is 235,000. 160 fish. Past the Togiak Tower yesterday, 6,726. Total escapement on the river is 34,620, out of escapement goal range of 150 to 270,000. And the total district run now is 270,000, out of a preseason forecast of 660,000 fish. Again, yesterday's total harvest was 1.75 million, and with escapement, including the Alagnac, the total run to Bristol Bay is now 45,010,000 fish. Average sockeye per drift delivery, Igigig yesterday claiming the top spot with 1,383, Ugashik 1,024, Nooshigak 682, Naknek Wheejack 549, Togiak 165 fish. Looking at your allocation splits in the Ugashik district, drifters accounting for 91.1% of the harvest, Ugashik set 8.9%. In Igigik, drifters 87% of the harvest, Igigik set 13%. In Naknek Wheejack, the drifters 69.7%, Naknek set 17.2%, Wheejack set 13.1%. Here in the Nooshigak District, drifters 76.9%, Nooshigak set 17.2%, Igushik set 3.3%, unspecified 2.6%, Togiak 100% unspecified. Your permit and drift vessel registrations as of 10:50 this morning, thanks to the Dillingham office for the update there. Ugashik permits 384 registered this morning. Expecting to climb to 416 after the wait on 291 vessels going to 316. 93 D-boats today, expecting 100 D-boats after the wait period. Igigik fleet, 384 permits registered to fish, no changes indicated this morning. That's on 283 boats, 101 D-boats. Naknek Kwejek registered this morning, 593 permits, climbing to 609 after the 48-hour wait period. That's on 497 vessels, climbing to 511, 96 are D-boats. Nushigak now just 274 permits registered to fish on 217 vessels, 57 D-boats. And Togiak, 43 permits on 43 vessels, no changes indicated today. Baywide, as of 10:50 this morning, there were 1,678 permits registered to fish, going to 1,726 after the wait. That's on 1,331 vessels, going to 1,370 after the wait, 347 D'd up this morning. In Area M, the area from, or the sections from Bear River, PM Bight, Three Hills, Ilnik, and Outer Port Hyden, landing 101,000 sockeye yesterday after a harvest the day before of 83,000 sockeye. Season total harvest in those sections, 2,275,000 fish. Nelson Lagoon's harvest steady at about 17,000 the last several days. Total harvest there, 225,000 fish. That is your daily run summary, shortened up as we lose data points from the fishery. This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. Back in a moment.
Bristol Bay Fisheries Report was made possible in part by the Bristol Bay Fisheries Association, advocating for fishermen. More information at bristolbayfishermen.org.
Catch this show nightly at 6, 10, and 2 a.m., at least through Sunday. We might wind it down after that. Nice to hear from many of you this year. fish@kdlg.org if you'd like to get in touch by email. Our phone number is 907-842-5281. It's been nice to talk with several of you this week during the pledge drive, but also with some good tips of what you've been experiencing out there this season. Earlier today, I spoke with Buck Gibbons, the captain of the Stevie K, who's been fishing all season in the Ugashik. The activity has picked up, but as he mentioned this morning, so have the number of participants.
The place looks like a city. It's exploded with effort and tenders, and it's clear that this is the last stop for quite a few folks. And it'll be kind of a dogfight from here on out with all the competition. So it's no time to drift and dream, so to speak.
How has the fishing been the last few days? Obviously, it picked up quite a bit after that long lag time. But how do you put the season in characterization to say last season?
Well, it's pretty clear that a lot of us wanted to start down here, and last season was really good from the very beginning, but this year having to wait to Dago Creek for 7 to 9 days while some of the other districts got plenty of fishing time certainly impacted the bulk of the Ugashik fleet. And so kind of a salvage mission, so to speak, in terms of trying to catch up or get to a point where we're comfortable with what we're capable of catching. But the Nishigak is the top dog this year. God bless those guys. They did really well over there.
What do you think the conversation will be in the off season? I know you've been watching what's happening, and from there, while you all were waiting for fish, and a lot of folks plugged up, a lot of labor issues, a lot of tendering issues, I think. What gets talked about this fall?
All the above. We're still kind of in the fog of it all, and so until we can get home and synthesize it, it's still kind of a blur in my mind. I think every company always has tender issues. Every company always has labor issues. Every company, for the most part, always has production issues. And so what else is new? that's, you know, we have to continue to remind ourselves that no one's got a gun to our head. We're doing this because we want to.
We'll be right back. an update from Lisa Krebs-Barsis at the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. She was monitoring the vessels that went down in the big fishing night in the Nooshigak. The N-11 was patched and refloated on July 10th and towed back to Dillingham, she says. The small amount of fish that remained on the vessel will be disposed at the Dillingham landfill. Absorbent material used will be burned in a smart ash and oily water will be shipped out of Alaska for proper disposal. Resolve Magone reported that all nets around the vessel were retrieved. Again, that's an email from the state DEC regarding the N-11 that went down after a big night in Flounder Flats here in the Nooshigak District. Well, activity is slowing up just a little bit in the Naknek-Quejack, but it's not over yet there. The openers have been nonstop for set netters, which keeps beach tenders busy collecting fish all day long. Earlier today, KDLG's Caitlin Tan tagged along for a ride out with an AGS beach tender and sent back this report.
That's the sound of 200 pounds of fish being transferred from a brailer to a cooler on a beach tender. Jack Arcand is making the rounds collecting fish from set net sites. He drives what is called a deuce and a half with six coolers that can hold about 5,000 pounds of fish total. He says he avoids filling each RSW with more than 800 pounds of fish to prevent bruising or spillover.
I could squeeze, but you start to run out of water and ice. And then at that point, what's the point? You want to keep them cold.
The beach gang work hours can vary. Arkin says everything depends on the tides and openers.
Like, we just go with the tides. And we've been out here from when one tide ends to another beginning. Like, we've been here that long before, depending on how much fish there is out there.
So how many hours would that be?
I mean, I've pulled 24s before. It's starting to wind down now.
During the peak of the season, there are three AGS trucks on the beach picking up fish. With each truck is a tractor to move and weigh the fish. John Bauman is on the job today. He's also in charge of the fish receipts.
It has their information on the card, and then it's basically like a credit card with a chip in it. You swipe it and all the information, so it's got like a card reader, and you just go, whoop.
Gives us a little printout. Everything's on there. What kind of fish we sold, how many pounds of each, whether they were bled or iced or what.
I guess It's an easier way for them to keep track of it instead of all their paperwork. Right. And they can also send it to Fish and Game easier.
Instantly.
That's Carol Ann Hester. She's delivering fish to the beach gang. Hester and her husband have a daily competition guessing the weight of their catch. Today she won, with a guess just less than 440 pounds total.
He's 4 pounds over, so he loses. Every day we guess whoever is closest to the weight without going over Price is Right rules wins and gets to buy lunch.
I love it.
I lost.
Gets to buy lunch. Yes, yeah. It's a matter of pride.
So you're buying today.
No, I didn't win.
No, he lost. I lost too.
Although the fish were slow this morning, Hester says it's been a pretty steady season. Arkand says the peak was 4th of July. The beach gang hauled in 85,000 pounds of fish. They typically tender fish for set netters without skiffs or when the tide is too far out to reach sea tenders. On busy days, Arkand says he's made well over 20 trips between the beach and AGS, which is about a 10-minute drive. There's a fleet of 7 trucks. When one fills up, reinforcement comes in. Each truck is also named after the beach boss's wives. On this particular day, we rode in Dolores and Judy. Sometimes the trucks get stuck. Arkin says it takes one truck to pull the tractor out and two to pull another truck out. Today, Arkin switches trucks. The loaded one will be delivered to AGS while he picks up more fish. He says it feels like the salmon run will never end.
Right now, it feels like forever.
Until September.
Feels like a long time. I don't think it'll ever end.
They will keep beach tendering until AGS quits buying fish, which was July 18th the past 3 years. In Naknek, I'm Caitlin Tan.
Made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons. What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is made possible by generous support from Bristol Bay Native Corporation, following a Fish First policy to sustain and promote the economic and cultural value of wild Alaska salmon in the Bristol Bay watershed.
Thanks for staying with us tonight. Well, we know that the success of the fishing season has ripple effects to other towns, municipalities, and local businesses. That includes grocery stores, fabricators, bars, restaurants, coffee shops, and your fishermen's supply stores. We sent KDLG's fisheries reporters out around Dillingham and Naknek to talk to some local business owners and shopkeepers and see how their season has been going as well.
I'm a hard-working man.
Chanel Faux Tide Table Coffee. It's been really good. It's been very busy, especially with the summer season.
I'm Sally Tuckwalk. I am a taxi driver for my best friend Jody here at Redline. Been doing it on and off over the last 10 years or more. It's been a good season. We have a new crew training. All in all, business was kind of sporadic coming in, less than I thought. People have more vans, more cars are barged here every year. And once they get here, you know, get down from the airport, it's pretty much to the store, to wherever, to get their license, to LME, LFS, back down. And on the tides when they come in and pick up groceries, we're already seeing a haul out a little bit here and there of the crew members that have to go home early, or the extra guy, or people that are getting hit, hurt, quitting, or just ready to go home.
Travis Howard, Howard Fabrication. It's gone good. It's gone real good, actually. Hopefully it continues. We do emergency repairs mid-season, you know, when the guys go out and break something, we repair it, obviously. So there was quite a bit of that this year, and, you know, it's kind of calmed down here for the last week, 10 days. But prior to that, yeah, it was a lot of work. You know, the guys really test their equipment, and if it's got a little chink in the armor, per se, that, yeah, it breaks, you know, and they got to come back in for emergency repairs.
My name is Jessica Miller, and I bartend at Fisherman's. Overall, it's been a really good year. Busy at the start and usually at the end, too, when they're done. When the fishermen are out, usually the cannery workers get a little bit of a break and get to come in, and then it's kind of vice versa. Nobody really gets, like, mixed drinks and stuff here, you know? They're kind of like manly men. They just get, like, Alaska Ambers on draft, stuff like that. Coors Light is really popular. Rainier. The cannery workers drink a lot of Corona.
Yeah, hi. Lummy Dave. Manager at LFS Dillingham. It's been very busy, fun, frustrating, but all in all, I think the Nishigak really came through this year, and it was a lot of fun, a lot of work. We hang a lot of nets and timing and just shipping frustrations, just, you know, trying to get stuff here in the middle of nowhere in a day or less. It's hard.
I'm Jackie Ramsrud, and I'm from Park River, North Dakota, and I come up here and volunteer at the net.
And I'm Judy Raymer. I'm from Coal Camp, Missouri, and I also am a volunteer.
It's busy. It's a nice time here.
Yeah, everyone is very friendly. Everyone's nice who comes into the net, and so we've had a good time visiting with everyone, the local people and also the cannery workers and fishermen who've come in.
A lot of the cannery workers come through, but then the fishermen come when they have to dock or get off for some reason. We give them coffee, cookies, drinks. It's kind of like a home feel in here, you know, they kind of feel at home. And then we give out free Bibles and tracts and Christian books. We sit and listen to them and hear about their lives or whatever, and then we share the Lord with them.
My first name is Iseta, and last name Sherman. It's been crazy. It's been crazy, but good crazy. And it just seems like every year, it's like the salmon. It's not really predictable. I don't know who the salmon prophets are out there, but I think the salmon does what the salmon does, and we just get to ride with it. I don't really, like, this year's a different year, but every year seems different. The fishing's not good. We get the sad stories. So I'm not sure if we're just frustrated bartenders and playing with coffee just to kind of do that, but it's really neat because you get people when it's not so good, and you get to listen to their stories and be compassionate with them. And then when it's wonderful, they come and celebrate with us. So it's always, for us, it's always good.
Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. A woman done left, took all the reason I was working for. You better not try to stand in my way as I'm walking out the door. Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here.
This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. We're glad to have you tuned in today. Email in from a listener. This from Tyler Dan. He's a fisheries geneticist at the Gene Conservation Laboratory in Anchorage. They process those salmon that come in from Port Mueller. Regular listeners, they catch this show each morning listening online. She says, hello, Dave. I hope this finds you well. Great job with Fisheries Report this year. I've really enjoyed it. The development of the Bristol Bay Fisheries Collaborative is a pretty amazing thing, in my opinion, says Dan. I think it's a great model and unparalleled in Alaska. There are places where fishing groups and industry support the department, Chignik, for example, but not as explicitly or as substantively. It would be great to hear from Michael Link about how this is going. Thank you for that email. Well, Michael Link is the executive director of the Bristol Bay Science and Research Institute that pulled this collaborative together, and I spoke with him earlier today for an update. Glad we got to catch up sometime this season. We talked to you ahead of the season about the fact that this nice collaboration was being put together. Can you give listeners who aren't aware of all the details what came together, and has it been a success? Did it work out?
Thanks, David. Good to be here. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Collaborative was an organized effort to formalize what's been going on for many years. To step up, bring stakeholders together, and provide some additional financial support to ADF&G, for the department, to continue to manage the fishery intensively as they do. Budget cuts over the last 3 to 5 years took almost 30%, a little over 30% of their budget, and programs began to be cut, and they looked to catch more fish from the fish stocks to help offset those budget cuts. But even in spite of some fairly ambitious cost recovery fishing plans, there were programs being cut. So about beginning a year and a half ago, we canvassed stakeholders and said, listen, we can try to get together, go to the department, and bring some resources to the table, but in a way that doesn't just embolden the legislature or the administration to begin cutting further, because I think everybody's going to step in. And so that's kind of it in a nutshell. It took 18 months to come together, and this is the first season that we're providing about $680,000 to the management program combined among all parties.
When you say all parties, you did get money from more than just a few sources, but there were a couple of key stakeholders in this. Can you explain who those were that quickly kind of came to the table to talk about this?
Sure. We started with the DriftNet Fishermen's Association, the Regional Seafood Development Association, and processors. Both groups had been providing funding in recent years and had stepped in last year to help shore up some missing projects and stop the cost recovery fishing in the case of those two groups. So we went to them first, got some early commitments. They wanted us to broaden the support, and so we did. We went to other organizations, communities, municipalities, and raised some additional money. But those two groups, the DriftNet Fishermen's Association and the dozen processors, provide about 40% of the money. BBSRI provides half, and the remaining group provides 10-12%, the remaining group of a couple dozen organizations, municipalities, and companies.
Let's talk briefly what might have happened had this not occurred. First of all, how many fish do you think would have been pulled out of the community harvest quota to go to cost recovery to cover costs this year?
Boy, you know, I think they were going to probably try to raise $250,000, $300,000. And, you know, how much that got bid for, how much somebody paid for that in pounds of fish, I'm not sure. It's sometimes as little as 20 or 30 cents a pound. So 3 pounds, half a fish per dollar, multiply that out. You might need several hundred thousand fish. I don't know because it didn't go out to tender. We raised the money and the department agreed not to go out and do cost recovery fishing.
Now, the messaging to get stakeholders to the table is not a difficult sell for people who deal in this pretty regularly, but for folks out there just listening casually to what you're talking about here, what projects were deemed to be necessary to stay in place, and why, with your many, many years in this bass fishery, are those so important to have?
Yeah, well, you know, it's the assessment tools that provide manager real-time information to make decisions on tide-to-tide basis, day-to-day basis, to meet escapement goals. The fisheries managed to ensure enough fish are let into the escapement. And so there's in-river test fisheries, which were all recent years being funded by this cost recovery money. There were The catch sampling, which allows us to figure out where all the fish were bound for so that we can reconstruct the run each year and understand the dynamics, some counting towers, and the Port Mueller test fishery. All those things managers use every day, every half day, to decide whether to open or close. And it's that intensive management in this fishery that allows them and the industry to catch, you know, essentially millions more fish than they would if they didn't have any of this information. They would have to manage so conservatively, and we would see much larger escapements in some years and much smaller escapements in other years if they didn't have that kind of finger on the pulse of the fish behavior and the abundance of fish in a given year. So it's all things that allow them to do this very intensive management we've all gotten used to doing. And none of the contributors really doubted the value of this. It was just kind of getting them all to jump in at once. Everybody knew, you know, instantly that this is a relatively small amount of money, given its impact on the fishery and on the suppliers and the communities. And it was just getting them all to see that others were involved, and didn't take long.
All right. I have another question for you, Michael Link, and this one comes to us from one of our listeners here.
Hey, David. It's Paul. I got a question for you, and maybe you know the answer, you can get it. And that is, the Alagnac, is this the first year they've ever, you know, had a counting tower or whatever up there on the Alagnac? Because I never really remember them having that before. And was that always, whatever went by was included in the escapement to the Kwijak? Maybe I'm all messed up here, but give me a call if you have an answer. Thank you.
All right, in from Paul Frist Mickelson, a former captain of the Skagerrak here. What say you, Michael Link, about the Alagnac Tower that we see the counts of so nicely each day this season?
Sure, yeah. It used to be called the Branch River and the Branch River Tower, and it was run for many years, I think a few decades almost. It's a relatively small stock tributary of the Kwijak, and subsequent to statehood and beginning to count all these major sockeye stocks, had a tower on it for years. It was relatively small relative to the Naknak and Kwijak, and the timing of the information usually came a bit later. And managers focused on meeting the escapement goals of the two adjacent rivers that feed into the district. So it wasn't a high priority tower, and it was a few hundred thousand fish. And so during some rounds of budget cuts in the 90s and early 2000s, it was eliminated, this cut, saying it wasn't essential. 2004 was, I think it was 04, 05, 06, in that range. There was a couple of years where 5 million fish came back to the Alagnac, and so the makeup of that fishery changed. There was a big stock that was contributing. The Kwijak was not contributing so much, and it became much more important. So there were attempts to bring it back earlier, a few years back. I think we ran it for a few short years, and it got cut again. And the Bristol Bay Fisheries Collaborative identified it as a very large stock that should be monitored, and it should continue the data set, which we had for 50 years, which monitors the escapement and the subsequent production so we can forecast it. And then it had a very real in-season benefit or information value as well, because managing the Naknak-Kwijak district requires that mid-season or so you identify how big the Kwijak River run is, and to do that and then set its escapement goal at 50% of what you think it's going to come back as a run size. And the Alagnac's key to that. If the Alagnac is contributing millions of fish to the district and you don't know that, you're going to have to apportion those to the Kwijak River or the Naknak, but some will be apportioned to the Kwijak. And so you'll erroneously assess the size of the Kwijak. You'll ramp up its escapement goal even higher than it maybe needs to be at 50% of its total run. So I know that's kind of a complicated answer, but the tower's been there before. It became more important when the stock improved. We've always maintained brood tables, so we've always gone up postseason. We, the department, gone up postseason and done aerial surveys, taken nodulous ear bones from fish to identify the age composition, and so on and so forth. So just like all the major river systems, it has something called a brood table. It just has never had a tower for many of the last 12, 14 years, and it's become a more important contributor, and as a result, we think it's too big and too important to just ignore in season and collect some information postseason.
All right, and a final question for you is, are you satisfied with the way this came together this year? Are there any missing components or too many components in the plan? And what about next year? Do you have any idea if this will be necessary again and reapproach it as a continual effort?
Well, I think it's going to take a little bit of time to rebuild the state's budget. It's not going to happen overnight, for sure. So I think there will be some form of support raised through this process for next year. Some things like Port Moeller have always been supported by industry, and we folded Port Moeller into this. So I think there will be some base funding there. Some of these projects that we all think should be on the state's general fund, we will work with the legislature and the administration to put those back into the budget. You know, what we did this year was we had identified over the course of the winter that in addition to these field programs, we needed to make sure that we had the capacity in ADF&G's management staff to manage this fishery. They're a big part of the equation. You can have all the monitoring tools in the world, but if you don't have good people there with some experience, they can still not manage the fishery as well. So we had identified some additional support, Westside Assistant Area Manager, some additional resources elsewhere in the system. We didn't get those in place this year because it came together too late to really affect, to get somebody on the ground or in the bay in time. So I think that'll be folded into it. We just wanted to everyone to recognize that it's the personnel component that is a big part of it, and continually cutting budgets and pulling away resources that they rely on. And these resources they would rely on become the next generation of managers, and so they've been around for a while, not in the hot seat, but they've watched it all. So these assistant area management biologists is one position I think we would like to see supported. We may be able to convince the administration and the legislature to build that in, but in the meantime, we see those pieces as important.
Michael Link with the Bristol Bay Science and Research Institute, Executive Director. Thank you for your time here. I know we'll follow up in the off season, but we appreciate this update and probably should have done it sooner this season.
Thank you, Dave. It's been a pleasure. I appreciate it.
Fish at KDLG.org or 907-842-5281 if you'd like to get any final messages out to the fleet, feedback, or story ideas this season. We've got to wrap tonight up to make room for our pitchers who are going to come in here and shake a few more coins out of your pockets here tonight during our 2017 fun drive. Lots of rock and roll and on-air fun on the way during the next couple of hours here. Your marine weather forecast: west winds 15 knots, diminishing to 10 after midnight here in Bristol Bay, seas 3 feet. Calm tomorrow with west winds 10, seas 2. Tomorrow night, west 15, seas 3. And Sunday, south winds of 10 knots, seas 2 feet. From Port Hyde to Cape Sarachef, west winds tonight, seas up to 3. Tomorrow, variable 10, seas 3. Tomorrow night, winds moving out of the southeast, seas 3, and south winds on Sunday of 15 knots, seas up to 4. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is dedicated to covering the greatest sockeye salmon fishery on earth. It's made possible with the generous support of our underwriters, listeners, and you, the fishing fleet, with help from everybody here at KDLG. I'm Dave Benninger. Good night, good fishing. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth is the world's greatest salmon fishery through investment in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA, we're on board with you.